Winner.
I can hear you. I can hear myself now, too.
That's good. That's better.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, like these stands help a lot.
Yeah, they
do, right? Yeah, so let's fucking get into it.
So what do we talk about, brother?
Let's talk about what we got right
here.
Okay,
why don't you describe to the audience what we have?
Welcome to the Winner Winner Chicken Podcast, the only podcast where comedians sit down and eat an entire rotisserie chicken.
Yes.
So right now we're dealing with a little Acme brand.
I love it.
Traditional style, along with some potato salad, pasta salad.
I've never been a pasta or a potato salad guy. Isn't that funny? Like,
I was like, I don't know what to do in terms of sides. So
I'm also so massively hungover that the watching me eat today, you might watch me puke.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you said you went drinking 2 days in a row.
I went drinking 2 days. I'm Nick. I'm 40 years old, and I'm too fucking old to be behaving like this. Yeah, I went out. I went out Wednesday night, and then last night, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna get drunk. Like, you know, I'm gonna have a couple beers.
Nice.
And that was just a bad fucking decision. You know, like, you know, I went to, there's a show in Delaware run by a guy named Fenris that I went to the other night. And it was fucking great. Like, it was fun. It was, you know, and I drank with, you know, our friends, because you and I have the same kind of comedy friends. Mm-hmm. I fucking love rotisserie chicken, by the way. And
it's the best.
I really think it is.
It's like, it really is one of those foods that can like unite people of all backgrounds, because it's so much, it's so cheap for like a dinner.
Mm. When I was growing up, they used to market the home rotisserie chicken, like the cooker.
Yeah,
and I was always very interested in that. Like, and I just never bought one as an adult.
The commercials I remember for it, and it was like such a huge looking thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, it would take up like half your kitchen, and you'd have to make rotisserie chicken every single day for a day
for the rest of your life. Mm. But I'm really glad that they started doing this. You know, what's a really good rotisserie chicken, believe it or not? Walmart. I swear to God,
their like prepared foods, I guess, are getting like all the rage, because they're the ones behind those like new Dunkaroos that everyone's going crazy about.
I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a cookie with frosting dip.
Oh, God, that's it.
You can pick up at the store, yeah.
I think that food's getting better. Like when I was a kid, you just didn't have all these fucking choices, you know? We can curse, right? Like, that's not a thing.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm submitting this to SNL. So.
Well, I don't fucking know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know if you were really submitting it to something, so I don't want to sit here and...
No, curse it up, dude. I don't give a shit.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, choices.
Like... Sorry, I'm chewing. But when we were kids, there was, like, Mexican... There was no fast, casual Mexican, like Chipotle or Qdoba. Yeah. There was no Panera.
Yeah.
You had, like, fucking Burger King, and you were happy, and you got a crown, and that was it. Like, you know... So,
in general, too, it would be like, there would be like, out in the suburbs, there would be like one Mexican place, or like two Chinese food places.
Yes. Yeah.
And like,
now it's just everywhere.
Yeah, it would be like China, New Garden, and then it would be like number one palace. Like,
oh, we used to have a, what's it called? The fucking name of it. It had like 80 different names. It was like China Garden 1, China Garden 2, and they were in the same town. Or you see the number 1, but you never see number 2. Like,
yeah.
Which always made me laugh.
One place that was funny up in Ellesmere in Delaware, there's three-star Chinese restaurant.
A three star,
which is great, because they're like, it's good, like, enough, you know.
Like, we're okay, you know.
Yeah, we're in the upper 50th percentile.
Yeah, like we're there.
Like they're gonna pass us on to the next grade because they don't hold people back anymore.
No, they don't. So wait, how did you like? Have you always been a food guy, or is it like something you developed as you got older?
Well, I feel like most food guys.
I don't want to call you a foodie because I hate that term. No,
yeah, that's like, yeah.
You know, it's such a shitty.
That's like a self, like that's a term people give themselves yes. when they're a piece of shit.
Yeah, like, ooh, I'm a foodie. And it's yeah. like, because you're not an interesting person.
But really, like people that get like super interested in food, like I feel like 9 out of 10 times start out as just a fat kid.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And then naturally, it's just like, I should like fucking, like learning how to cook.
Is yeah.
obvious to me because it's just like. Oh, yeah, eventually you need to eat.
Yes.
And someone won't cook it for you.
No, you don't like, have a parent to cook for you. Mm. I worked in the restaurant business for 10 years. That's right. How I learned to cook. Mm. And I found that the only skill that I learned as like a late teen and early adult, it's the only one I still use every fucking day.
Oh, yeah.
So like I have a brother who's a teacher. I talk to him about it all the time. I'm like, I don't know why you guys don't teach like applied things that you're going to use later in life.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, that never made any sense to me.
We never had wood shop when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you would always, like, see it on TV and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was always like, I fucking wish I knew how to fix anything. Like, the only, like, problems with a car that, like, I can fix or, like, remedy in the immediate before I get to a mechanic.
Yeah.
I only know... because they just already happened and they were currently happening yes. to me. I've had the car overheat. I've had to like change a tire.
Yes.
But it's like if that, I don't know anything in advance of how to fix.
Yeah.
Anything.
Like you're not going to go in there and start fucking around with your alternator.
No.
Like you're not, that's not like, and I think about that because like when I was in school, that's when this big push to go to college went.
Yeah.
So like there was no like if you were on a college track, you didn't take a shop class. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that really fucked me as an adult because I got to save myself thousands of fucking dollars and heartache if I just knew how to fix my lawnmower.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like my only fucking gripe with high school is that yeah. I wish they taught me how to do something.
I remember they had a problem like when I first got to my high school with kids. Like only fulfilling their maximum amounts of credits to graduate high school. Mm-hmm. So they would just like leave like and just not do like half the classes that they're scheduled for because they didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And then they basically like made it a rule that you had to stay in high school an entire day. And it was just like, yeah. And those kids like own a house.
Yeah. All of my friends who were in the trades all bought houses quicker, all owned their own businesses, had a different set of like autonomy that like I didn't have in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And all because, you know, you have to go to fucking college. And it's like, I really wish I didn't. And then I ended up becoming a fucking mailman for 15 years anyway. So
yeah,
what was the point of college, you know? That's how I always view it. Like,
what was the weirdest stories you've had as a mailman?
I've had a couple. Like, yeah. The one thing I love, and it'll never get old, was either hearing people fight or fuck. Because that's all people really do. So, especially like on a day like today, like we're at my house right now and I have the window open. So, during the spring and summer, people, or fall, I mean, people open their fucking windows all the time. But but when it was really nice out, like, you'd walk up to houses and, like, you'd hear just people just fucking going at it, like, on a Tuesday at, like, 12 o'clock.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's weird timing. You have to be, like, home on a weekday.
Yeah, like, it's just, like, the amount of timing of it is bizarre. And I had a lot of instances where I was like, holy shit, like, these people are really fucking going after it, you know? But yeah,
there's not many jobs where you can catch people having sex.
No, like, there's very few.
Like on the clock.
Nope. I mean, I've had only twice did I ever have like an invitation to come in.
Yeah.
From a woman. And I declined both.
Oh, damn. Like gross? Or...
Unethical. Like at work. Like, I just couldn't, you know what I mean? Like, if I got, like, you can get in trouble for that. And, like,
Nick Cupsey, a man of ethics. That's what
trust me, I'm not a man of ethics. I just liked my job and knew I could get in trouble. Fair. That's fair. You know? Too. I'm not an ethical. Yeah. I'm a fucking piece of shit. But there's a certain amount of, like, where it's like risk reward. Is it worth the fucking risk?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? No. I was like, this is not fucking worth it. Like, I'm not going to go through and get in trouble. Going into someone's house and my boss finds out. It's just a whole fucking thing. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I've worked with people that have done it.
Yeah.
I worked with a couple people. It was one time I worked with this fucking degenerate piece of shit. Like, Kev, like, ran around with his fucking wife constantly. Like, and I grew up with him. Like, we just happened to end up working together.
Yeah.
So, like, one day he was running late on his route. So they sent me and another letter carrier to, like, help him out.
Mm-hmm.
We get there, we can't fucking find him. His truck's parked in the street. My coworker that came with me started screaming the guy's name. He's like, John, get out of whatever fucking whore's ass you're in right now. Because we knew he was late because he was fucking this girl. So, yeah, I had a lot more interesting things happen with my coworkers than...
Hey, man, fair game.
You know?
As long as they're not comedians... Who? How's their story going to get heard? Do you know?
Well, they don't care.
Interesting stories.
Like,
someone
they would
has to tell them.
A lot of guys I worked with, yeah, guys who would drink on the job.
That's always such an interesting thing to me.
Yeah, like it never made any sense to me. I worked with this one woman. She was like a full blown alcoholic, and she came out to take some mail off me because I. Had to do some work, like some union stuff. Kev, she comes out, she's fucking slurring. It's like 3:30 when all the school buses are out. And I was like, oh my God, like this fucking woman's going to kill somebody with her car. And it was the only time I ever thought about snitching, like in my entire life.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I just told her the next day, I was like, ever do that again, I'm calling the cops.
Yeah.
I mean, she could barely talk. Like she was fucking like annihilated. Like how you and I would be like on a Saturday night.
And she's like, oh, and she was going out to carry letters at that
point? Yes.
Like, I never understood that because like...
Why would you want to be drunk at work?
It doesn't make work more fun.
No.
I remember I like did it in college a couple times when I was working at like a fucking shitty grocery store.
Yeah, yeah.
But like it was so difficult.
Yeah, it's a
even
nightmare.
Even doing like stupid, like easy stuff, like that you would just like not even think about at work. It's such like a task. Like I don't understand why you would want to do that to yourself. Because then, like, you don't have energy after that to go.
It's not like you're
drink.
Going. Yeah. None of it ever made sense to me. Like, I worked with a bunch of people. Like when I first started, they weren't as. It was 2002, so it was before like technology really, really took off.
Mm-hmm.
Not before, but like before it changed the world.
Oh yeah, that was back when you could send someone a text and they like wouldn't respond to you, and that would be like reasonable. They would be like, "Oh yeah, like I didn't see it."
Yeah,
it didn't go through.
It didn't.
That
go
was
through.
The best. That was the best time period when you could just go, "Oh yeah, I just didn't get that."
Yeah, I didn't get it. It didn't come through. And I think that we're just gonna get off topic from the mail, but
yeah,
I think that there was something to be said with not being able to be accessed at all times.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that like part of the problem we have with our country now might be that people are constantly able to get a hold of you and vice versa. And then you can see things in real time on social media. And I think it just causes this terrible anxiety that like never existed in society until we got cell phones and we got, like if we're all sitting around and we are all sitting around a lot of times with comedy. And there's even like the slightest lull in conversation, everybody whips out their phone.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like fucking annoying at this point. And it's not just comedy. It's everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And I've just had like, there's a certain amount of like, is life that boring that we need to live through a screen? Like,
yeah.
You know?
The other weird thing is it's just like, you have so much more information about people than like you even want.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, I'll get, like, so pissed sometimes, like, seeing, like, just shit that other people are up to that, like, annoys me, like, they're fucking being dicks or something, I don't know. And then, like, I just remember, like, oh, yeah, I can just, like, not look at this.
Yeah.
And some people, like, younger people literally don't have a concept of that, where, like, they, like, try and get people, like, banned or like censored from stuff, it's like, oh no, yeah, you can just like not look at it.
You can just not. Yeah, that's it used
and
to be
for your life. That's usually the best option.
I remember when I was a kid with TV, and TV was still like a big deal then, and be like, well, so and so, you know, you don't have to watch it. Yeah. Like, you don't have to, like...
Yeah, who gives a shit?
Like, I don't know. I think about, like, this whole Trump thing. I was thinking about politics in general the other day. That somehow it's become, like, okay, just be... Like, all right, Paul Ryan retired, or is retiring. He's stepping down.
Yeah.
And I thought about, okay, the guy's, like, the number... the third most powerful man in our country. Mm-hmm. You know, he's third, you know, second in line in succession to the president. And I'm thinking about this guy walking away and all these nasty things people said about him. And I thought to myself, I go, you know, not everybody that you disagree with politically has malicious intent or is a malicious actor. Like, you can't demonize people for having a different political agenda than you do, because it gives rise to people like Trump, like in the sense that, like, we were so quick to demonize all these politicians that when we actually had a real fucking animal, you know, like it was the boy who cried wolf. Mm-hmm. And also, too, just because someone agrees with you politically and they hit all your same political points doesn't make them, A, your friend, or B, a good person automatically. Like, we tend to think of, like, us versus them, so you're on my side and, you know, you're a, you know, we're better people than everyone else. And I don't like that, because I just don't, I think it's, like, fascist. It's fascist, yeah, on both sides, you know?
Yeah, and it's, like, at least with, like, the Paul, like, Ryan thing, and, like, how, like, I just hate, like, how much people, like blowing off the steam, like, mm-hmm, so much more than they like making a difference.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, almost, at, like, every, like, major, like, political, like, action movement thing, like, uh-huh, didn't really achieve major change, like, no, following it of the past, like, few years, where it's just, like, like, when are we gonna stop, like, calling, like, false victories, like, if, like, you really, if you really, like, legitimately want change. And then, like, on the other side, it's just the thing that even I think bothers people about Paul Ryan is, like, he's, like, willing to say stuff that he doesn't believe,
mm-hmm,
which, like, as a comedian, I, like, understand a lot.
Yeah.
Because that's a large part of, like, what it is that we're doing.
Yes.
Or, like, is, like, getting into a character or, like, a cartoonization of yourself. And, like, that's not even the thing that people, like, call out. Like, they act as if it is his genuine opinions and stuff like that. And it's, like, you can achieve more headway on making him look bad, just, like, saying, like, oh, you don't even think that. Like, yeah, it's like, obvious, like... You, like, anyone with, like, basic human, like, behavioral understandings can tell from, like, your body language and stuff that you're bluffing on shit or saying shit that you don't even think is true. And, like, that would make him look worse in the eyes of people that already like him than just going, like, he's, like, evil. He's, yeah, like, a demon.
That's and, not, like, shit like that doesn't tell the whole story.
True. And it's just not true. It's not accurate. So, like, people that, like him... are gonna discredit your, like, your opinion more.
Yeah.
Because you're acting
like a child. You're, yeah, not, like,
exactly.
I watched his retire, not retirement, but, like, his announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept bringing up some, I think that like, I've had a lot of, like, discussions with people about this, which has been really cool. And we were talking about how I said, all right, Paul Ryan, he's number three. He's the third most fucking powerful man in the most powerful country in the world. Why would he willingly step away from that power? Like, and I started to think, and I watched his press conference, and he kept saying, like, my dad died at 16. My oldest daughter is turning 16. Like, I don't want to be a weekend dad. I don't want to be. It's possible for people to have a change of heart. And here they're like, oh, he fucking quit because he knows the GOP is going to lose and he didn't. And I said, okay, well, maybe that might be part of it. But when can we become a forgiving society and understand that people can grow? And yeah. I think that Paul Ryan spent 2 years dealing with Trump through the election and then the presidency. And I think he got fucking sick of it. Why can't someone just get sick of something and, yeah, walk away? And, like, why do you have to... Like, we're not a forgiving society anymore. Like, we are on a long enough timeline, but, like,
yeah.
But the immediacy is,
that's,
like...
That's the other thing that's crazy is, like, people, like, these, like, overreactionary people, like don't notice, like it's like, oh yeah, in like 6 months to a year, every single thing that like blows up has essentially gone away.
Yeah.
And is like forgotten and replaced. And like the other thing with the whole Paul Ryan thing is just like, oh yeah, like it's crazy because I kind of do believe like Donald Trump isn't particularly smart, but he's smart in the way that like Al Capone
yes
was smart, where it's like you don't have to be very intelligent and you can apply very like basic principles of like manipulation
yes
and just succeed that way. But and like that kind of thing is like crazy and unusual, where like a lot of these other players are still like complex human beings.
Yeah.
Where like he could just as easily like see that like there's going to be a huge problem with the GOP and want to get out, and simultaneously also have like young children that he wants to like relate to on like an adult level.
Yes.
Which like what in addition to like having more time to try and do that would be like hard to do while maintaining this kind of like caricature politician role, where like almost everybody that's like in Washington seriously, like a lot of them have like very serious drug problems.
Yeah.
That like had that wouldn't have ever have been called drug problems like 10 years ago because they're old and it's like prescription pills.
Yes.
So
there's a lot more to it. And I think that, I don't know, I used to post like a lot of political shit on Facebook, like I went through a brief period.
Oh yeah.
And like, I think everybody did. I think everybody, and then you realize that it's pointless, that you're fighting with people that you don't really want to fight with. And you're not getting your point across. You're not changing anybody's mind. So what's the use? You know, like, and there's, unless you can be like very deft and witty about it and able to like illuminate the absurdity, like, you know, our friend Rick is really good at that. Like he can point it out. And I can't, like, I don't have that fucking talent. Like I'm just not that talented. So, and I understand where my talent's going to take me and I can't do that. But when it's like someone that you, who is, you know, they're like, they're misinformed or underinformed and they're spouting off shit. And it's like, yo, dude, like take a second to fucking research. Like I got in an argument with a guy about North Korea and their nuclear program. And the guy's blaming the Clintons. And I was like, well, yeah, okay, I get that. And then I went back and it all started with Reagan. I was like, why don't you look at what Reagan did? This appeasement of North Korea began in the 80s. This has been going on. Like,
You could like even argue that it just goes back to the Korean War.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like they didn't let MacArthur keep marching.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, yeah, like we probably should have, like of all the dictators we tried to uproot in Asia during like the anti-communist period.
Yeah.
That was the one we probably should have got. And we didn't.
Yeah, and we didn't, you know, and, like, and we had the opportunity. And so for like a brief period, this is when I realized I'm a fucking idiot and I stopped posting stuff, is that I was arguing for a preemptive strike on North Korea's fucking, and to me, it politically makes sense.
Yeah, I remember that specifically because I was like, a lot of people are going to get really mad at Nick for like a very like valid point.
Like, yeah. And I wasn't trying to be like,
because of this human rights atrocities.
Like I've read about North Korea, like what he does, what they do to, he killed his own fucking uncle with an anti-aircraft gun.
Yeah.
I've seen those things fired.
Yeah.
So, and then you think about this guy, he has nuclear weapons and he's already isolated and he's all these things. And, you know, and if the United States is that worried, and if the world if we're that worried about the world's security, I didn't understand why that we would keep attacking, like we get involved in Syria, when to me, North Korea has always been the biggest problem that we faced in the world.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got a lot of blowback from that and I got a lot of shit. And a part of it was the way I phrased it. I have to admit, I didn't go about it the right way. So that's part of the problem. And two,
well, you were like still like making it a joke, kind of.
Yes.
Like, it was still like you were wording it in a way that's like, this isn't necessarily a popular
opinion.
Yeah. But there's merit to it. And a lot of people were like, what do you mean? There's no merit to it whatsoever, because it would be like encouraging war.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it's just like a lot of people don't realize it's like we're still like actively engaging military operations in the Middle East. That was like the first thing that Donald Trump like did that was like having actual impact on the country, and like nobody talked about it when he signed to like continue essentially the war in Iraq in perpetuity. Yeah. Again,
so like you bring up that point, and my thinking is, yeah, the only reason that people are afraid, or people kind of countered that, was because North Korea has nuclear weapons. So that takes the thing up to a whole other level. But it's okay to bomb countries. Like, that's all the United States has done in the past 40 years. We haven't fought anybody that could really fight us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, we decimated Vietnam. We didn't win the war, but we beat the fuck out of them. We killed millions. Like, we're not fighting a country that could turn around and say, oh, you want to fucking invade us? Well, we're just going to point our ICBMs at you.
And the other thing is, like that one soldier that got sniped, like running across the border in Korea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they did the autopsy, and he had the largest tapeworm.
Yeah.
The doctor was like, "What the fuck is going on inside of this person?"
Yeah.
And it's like, that's like the state of their military, like human being wise, where it's with American like intelligence and military.
I have to grab my phone for a
minute. You're good. Keep talking. With like American intelligence and ingenuity and military operative power, they're gonna make it like virtually impossible. Like, they're not gonna get a chance to get to the switch in North Korea. Like, I don't understand how I understand the idea of nuclear war is like scary, but it's like having a nuclear weapon when you can't get food for your citizens that won't make them sick. It's kind of like, okay, like it's a matter of time. And like them having a nuclear weapon makes sitting on like any kind of military action kind of more dangerous, because they have like, if they have the opportunity to strike first, they can strike harder.
Yes.
And it's just like, they don't have the ability to sustain a war.
The reason, I understand why North Korea wants nuclear weapons as a deterrent against the United States. We all know that makes sense, you know? But the problem, like, okay, I don't think that his missiles, the program and the technology is just not where it could be, where it could really have an effect against us, but it could hit maybe Hawaii, maybe U.S. territories within the Pacific, our allies, Japan, South Korea. So to me, it was more like, okay, this is a global problem. This is not just the United States politics and our bullshit.
Yeah.
You know? And I wasn't able to fucking really, you know, that's why I stopped, Kev.
And it's also like, that's like, that makes you like an actual fucking person when you can go, oh yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where like we meet. Not because it's not an impasse there. It's not like, oh, we'll never agree on this. And that's coming to like an actual understanding where it's like, oh yeah, the big issue, because it's accurate that it's like when they discovered how to make a hydrogen bomb, they discovered like a technology that America has had since the 1950s. So it's like, yeah, like America is still 60 to 70 years ahead of them. In terms of military technology, maybe like the actual force of like a hydrogen bomb is like hard to stop, but like we have like weapons and capabilities that like the American public doesn't understand.
Yes,
including myself, where it's like I know that they have something out there that's like fucking, you know, like we all know that.
I remember when the first Gulf War happened. And we got a glimpse into like the stealth fighters and all that.
Yeah.
And then I remember reading as a child and saying, if the government is going to let you know about this, that means they have something else that they're hiding. Yeah. Like, it's always like they're not going to show their hand. So there's a certain kind of like, I don't know. I just think that who fucking cares? Like, we're all going to die. Like, it's like, why take any of it seriously? You and I can't affect. I don't like that's where
yeah,
I.
Yeah, it's also like we're not going to send the troops into North Korea ourselves. Like, so what is the harm in talking about it in any capacity? Like, you know, like
my opinion of it has always been, I care about what happens in the world, and I care about, like, you know, I don't want to die early. But I'm starting to realize that, like, your opinions, especially on social media, it's like, it's fucking stupid. Like, why, like,
Like the best social media accounts are like the ones where like people just like put the least amount of thought into it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And just kind of like fucking throw a little stupid thing on the wall knowing that it's like stupid.
Yes.
And then it's like, oh yeah, that's like kind of fun or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like so many people like act like it's like a like an avenue for like serious
discussion
or change or
it's not
something in
it's
any not. Capacity.
Like, I just want to see dick jokes and like,
yeah,
you know, men and women making jokes and like having fun. But like also too, like you see it like with stand-up comedians, not just in a local scene, but all over, all of a sudden they're insanely political and like it gets kind of old. Like I'm kind of, yeah.
Well, I feel like people now are just like see what gets sold. And so much of it is just like shticky.
Yeah.
It's like not even necessarily that like the jokes are like hack or whatever, but it's like the person has a distinctive personality trait that they basically like discuss on stage.
Yeah.
And people are interested in hearing about that. And like it's somewhat humorous, but it's not really what stand-up comedy like ever was.
Yeah.
It's like it's way more similar to like British stand-up comedy and uh-huh. like one man show type yeah. of stuff where it's like, okay, like even if I like understand that this is like good, like it's kind of, there's so many like talented joke writer like stand-up comedians
yeah.
or like bit guys or whatever where it's like a lot of people are like coming in basically going like, I'm gonna tell this narrative and I'm going to get over like with like the story of my family
yeah.
or like my like job or some physical attribute or something.
Yeah.
And that's going to get me over, when it's just like, if regardless of who you are or like what you can talk about on stage, like what you can use from your personal experiences, to, like benefit you.
Yeah.
It's going to be like whoever like does the best on stage anyway. Where, like, I think a lot of people with interesting stories and backgrounds and stuff like that,
that their humor will shine through.
Like, if they, that, like, I think they lean on it a little much
okay.
sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's a crutch.
Yeah.
Right? Is that what
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah. Where it's like some people could, like, really, like, jettison themselves, like, into, like, some form of financial success
yeah.
in, like, this. But, like it's easier to kind of just like do what works on this level.
I was thinking about this, and I've had a bunch of conversations with people that I think that stand-up comedy is dying. And I don't mean it because of the people that are doing it or any of that stuff, Kev, but I think that like it used to be before, you only had certain instances that were like comedy. You had sitcoms, and then you had late night television and Saturday Night Live, and maybe the occasional sketch show on like another network.
Yeah.
But with the advent of social media, people are inundated with humor constantly, whether it's memes or jokes from friends, funny pictures, that like it almost cheapens stand-up comedy. Like it just doesn't, it like comedy doesn't have the shock anymore. I think that that's what it was always kind of like. I think nothing shocks us. There's no boundaries you can push, you know? And I think that like a lot of that has been eroded by social media.
Well, even like really when you think about it, I think you're almost like skipping a step there. 'Cause like, when you had SNL, the late night shows, and like HBO specials,
yeah,
like those were the only venues. And then like when Comedy Central came around, like that was literally a channel of like stand up
yeah.
comedy virtually for like a long time, where it was like they had shows where they would like animate people's bits.
Yes,
like,
I remember.
And like crank yankers
yep.
and stuff like that. But it was mostly just stand up comedy all the time. So like you could see like one or two half-hour specials from, like, a person. You could see, like, 10 people without having an HBO subscription.
Yeah.
Or being restricted by that, like, two-minute late-night format or whatever. So that's when, like, a lot more comics started to gain notoriety at the same time, I feel like.
You yeah.
know, like, Dave Attell, Greg Giraldo, like, early.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
stuff
yeah.
like that. That's like, that was like a bigger time. And then like after, like, I feel like Carlos Mencia and like Dane Cook kind of like blew out, there was like a weird void for a while.
Yes, there was.
And then, like, now, like, we're kind of on the tail end of, like, when alt comedy was, like, super, super popular. Because I think kind of a lot of the, like, idealistic fans and stuff find out stuff about, like, TJ Miller or Cesare. Or, like, they're like, oh, this is, like, a human, like, this is a person.
It's a human being.
So, like, they're kind of, like, if they're being propped up by all these fans and stuff, they're going to behave as anyone would, as like kind of a piece of shit,
yeah,
in certain capacities. And that now is like coming to like an end, where now it, like, like certain, like, there's a lot that's going on to Netflix and stuff like that, but like I don't know how much people are actually watching everything.
I've watched a lot of them.
Yeah, and a lot of them aren't that great.
They're not that great. And I'm not knocking the comedians because I know how hard it is.
Yeah.
But I just remember when you would watch a half-hour special on Comedy Central.
It was so tight.
It was tight.
Yeah.
And then you would watch the hour specials that HBO and Showtime would do, and they were fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
So you always laughed at stand-up comedy because there was a lot more filters, and you had to, like, you had to be really good to get to these things.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen more shitty hour specials on Netflix where I'm thinking, like, I know guys in our local scene that are headliners that are fucking infinitely better than that.
Yeah, I know people in our local scene that aren't headliners that are better than a lot of
even guys. Still, right?
Like, but yeah, but again, it's not necessarily an issue of the, like, a lot of the times I think people, like, get stuff before they're ready for it. And then, like, in something like this, who is anybody to say, like, no?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, there's no filter, like, that's what I mean. There's no, like, gatekeeper that says you're not ready yet.
With less of a filter, it's going to become less economically viable for, like, them. Because, like, I imagine it's not that expensive to shoot a special compared to some other things.
I think, yeah, I don't.
But it's just, like, they're not going to keep producing all these specials that nobody cares about. Like, and it's going to.
Well, now Netflix is doing 15-minute specials.
Yeah.
So, like, that to me was, like, the death knell for comedy.
I think that's, like, their last attempt at kind of, like, being, like, oh, we're going to, like, harvest our own talent.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, with that kind of thing, you're not really. You can't make that big of an impression in 15 minutes anyway.
Yeah.
It's not that much bigger than a late night set.
Exactly.
Like,
right.
Like, yeah. So I think basically we're, like, at the very end of that curve of the bell curve again.
Yeah.
Where I think they're going to tighten up eventually on, like, who gets as much stuff. There'll probably still be more specials and more material out there than before, just because everything can be communicated easier than before.
That's yeah.
But the quality is going to, like, go up again, I think, in response to it. Because in, like, general, that's how most things work.
Yeah.
It goes, like, up, down.
And down, up, down.
Everything.
I just, like, see it as, like.
But it's never going to be, like, what it was before.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, like, gonna, I feel like it's gonna be like heavy metal or something.
Yeah.
Where there's always gonna be people that like it. And it's gonna, like, keep going to, like, more different places, and, like, and in doing that, there's gonna be people that, like, really stand out and are really, like, good and unique and stuff like that.
I'm not taking away anybody's talent, Kev.
But no. Like, but I mean, like, it's not gonna be, like,
earth-shattering,
commercially
viable,
successful in the way that, like, it could be with, like, Seinfeld,
yeah,
or, like, people like that, like, ever.
I just see that there's tons and tons and tons of comedians everywhere.
Yeah,
like the influx into it. It's just been inundated, and, like, I don't know, like, how viable of a career path it is.
Yeah.
And I'm saying for the good people. I'm not saying for, like, me, because I'm not capable of that. Right. I'm talking about the guys and gals that are really fucking good. Like, and it's got to be daunting to someone who has all that talent, and then they look up and they're like, fuck. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and you kind of hope that the more daunting it is, the less people will want to do
it. That's, yeah, like, hopefully it weeds people out.
But also, like, we were talking about before we started, that kind of boils down to, like, again, like, how, where people want to go with it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, because, like, if there's going to be tons of people that are like, oh, I do that on the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, something fun that I do. Then, like, okay, like then that's basically doing it on like the same level as like going to karaoke, like with your friends, which is like, that's fine. But like, there's other people that are trying to do another thing. And maybe like, as those two things become more like distinct, it might be better for both groups of people involved, you know, where like people that are more serious don't end up in the same places that I know that both of us have had to do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Christ,
what am I even doing here? Why am I even doing?
Yeah, there's been shows that have taken me to strange lands, and I've just been like, why the fuck am I here? Yeah. You know, and it's not disrespect to the venue or the people that are putting it on, but I do comedy probably 3 or 4 nights a week. Mm-hmm. And I get booked sometimes. You know, it's not bad. It's not. I don't have a bad comedy career. I'm not crushing it. I'm not fucking. You know, I'm not a barn burner. You know what I mean? But there's been certain times and I'm like, okay, well, like, if I'm here at Bumblefuck Bar 2 hours away from home for like $10 to do 10 minutes, like, why am I doing this? Is this an ego thing at this point? Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, there's a certain kind of like, there's a level where you get and you're like, I don't know if that's
like ego. It's like, sometimes it is like, just like a not succinct way of being like, okay, like maybe I need to re-strategize what I choose to accept or like where I'm willing to go and like what I'm willing to do and why.
Yeah.
And like I found that like focusing on that has really helped me because I can't really get out that many times a week.
Yeah.
Because I get up like pretty early for work. But because of that, I'm like more focused every time I go up because I'm not like, oh, I'm going to be like going up like 2 more times this week. If I go up like once a week,
you have to really make a count.
I've thought a lot about the jokes that I want to do next time I go up. And like, I like more, way more like ready. Like where, like when you first start out, I think it's important for like comfort to like go up a ton.
Yes.
As much as you can. So you're just like, you're not nervous there. Like, there's nothing like...
Because that's what I really think it is. I think it's the first 2 years, it's gaining confidence.
It's like putting less of a barrier between you and your material.
And when... At what point, like, do you say where you go... Like, I spent the last year going out, like, almost every night, and I don't want to do it anymore. I'm just tired, and it's...
Oh, yeah. And how useful is it at a certain point?
Like, that's the point. Like, at what point is it you're not getting a return on your investment? And... I don't know. I think it's interesting. I'm just, you know, I think about humor a lot, not just for my own sake or my own consumption or my own career, but like, it just doesn't seem to me. I think that we've become such as an open society and one that talks. Like, it used to be when a stand-up comedian would tell a funny story about something that happened to them, and you could like laugh because you didn't know any of the people involved, and it probably didn't happen to you, and you don't know anybody that situation happened to. But when you log on Facebook, you might see 6 people who've had the same situation happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes away from like what goes on stage. Because I can be like, oh, I've seen this online already with like my sister, you know, or...
Or when you think of like one-liner comics, like that whole like genre has been essentially replaced with the internet.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's a few like really good people that still do it. But it's like really hard to do without it just being a joke that someone else has posted.
Yeah.
And like nobody else has seen the joke in the audience or like another comic or even yourself to be like, oh shit, like that's something. Yeah. Like that happens like a decent amount of the time where it's like, oh, like I think of something and then I hear
it's parallel thinking
somebody else or like whatever.
I just think that it's like, I was talking to a friend today about this because he's like trying to figure out what he wants from all this. And like you just said, find out what you want, what you like, and then what you're willing to do, not willing to do. Because I think that people get wrapped up in like, I have to go here and I have to be out every night and I have to do this.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of quantity, but you know, are they, the quality of their life is suffering? Because if you're standing around in an open mic 5 or 6 nights of the week, it's like soul crushing.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that like, if there's nothing wrong with wanting to be ambitious with this. But at a certain point, like if it's making you miserable, then why fucking do it?
Yeah, and like I've always like tried to think of it like you can keep trying at some, like you could try and break down a wall by like repeatedly hitting your head against the wall.
Yeah.
Or like you can hit your head against the wall and then realize that you can just use a sledgehammer instead.
Yeah.
And it's like there's like trying again, like trying over and over and being persistent, And then there's like doing that, but never like changing anything or adapting anything or like being smart about it really in like a good enough capacity to make it work. But like, at the same time, like, I think a lot of the problems that a lot of people find is like, it not trusting themselves in like who to, or like being like tricked kind of in like who to take advice from.
Yeah.
Because like, I remember like a few weeks ago, I had like a comic talk, I was talking to him and he was new. He was like, what, like advice do you have? And like immediately I'm like, I don't want to fucking give anyone any advice. Cause like, I haven't done anything like in my own
mind
to warrant it.
Yeah.
And then like you see people that are like just as good as you, if not worse, that are so eager to like give advice to like people that are just starting out. And it's just like, you haven't achieved anything.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Like, and that's one thing like discussing like comedy theory, like how to deliver your jokes or like what things you can do to like kind of like amp up laughter on certain things.
Yeah.
Like that's like talking shop to me. Like that's not, but like on like how to like operate within the like scene or whatever and like stuff like that. It's just like, no, like you don't like make any money. Like, yeah, what are like, you talking about?
I could probably count, like I was talking to a friend from high school and I was like, I could probably tell you, like there's probably a figure I could figure out of how much I've actually made from comedy in 7 years. And I don't think that it's, if it broke two digits, like into 10,000, I'd be surprised. But only because we've put on our own show, so we made a little bit more money.
Yeah.
But like if you take that out of the equation, there's no way I've made more than $5,000-$6,000 in 7 years.
Yeah.
So like,
but, and that's the other thing that we were talking about, like, how willing are people to produce their own stuff versus like waiting for someone to like give them opportunities? Because it's,
I think,
like you're saying,
yeah,
you made like probably as much money, if not more, from what you
running a show. Yeah, run. I've made more money running shows. We started running shows in 2013 and we took 2 years off because we lost the venue because it closed.
Yeah.
So we couldn't find one. And it took us 2 years to find a venue. I would say that I've made more money producing shows than I'll ever make as a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
So, but the problem is with creating your own shows, and I think that you just, it's like spinning your wheels because
it's created, time and effort.
It's time and effort, and you've created this thing and people are going to see it and they like it. But in terms of like exposure, you're just another show in a drop of a fucking, in an ocean of other shows.
Ideally, it's something that like you build and then you pass on to like build something that's slightly bigger than what you had.
It's like the Raven Lounge would be, they've gone through a succession of different kind of like people who have run the mic, and which is awesome. And I think that, you know, it becomes like kind of like a legacy.
Yeah.
And I like that. I really like that. But I'm not creating a fucking legacy. Like, I know where this is, you know, I don't know. I have a lot of interesting theories about it. And I think that like, the more I think about it, the less I want to fucking do it anymore. You know, like when you put thought
this
to
it. This is Nick Cupsey's retirement podcast.
No, but like, and it's no disrespect. I think it's great.
No, know? Yeah, it is like a lot of times you do, like when you step back and look at it all, and it's just like, this is fucking insane.
Yeah, like I think that there's a certain level of insanity that goes in. Like I did this fucking terrible show once. And like about a year ago, and I was like in the middle of fucking nowhere, and I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing here? Like,
yeah,
like these people, nobody followed you after on social media. No one, like, there was like, you know what I mean, Kev? Like, it was it was just stupid. And I was like, this is fucking dumb. I was like, I need to get a fucking hobby, like maybe, you know, crochet or something.
Yeah, you're gonna be the bad boy of
crochet. Yeah, bad boy of crochet, you know, because I think that, you know, you kind of you think that you have, I think you get involved with it and you think that you're gonna like change the fucking world and your comedy is gonna be so brilliant, and then you kind of like get to your talent wall, you know, like,
yeah,
like I've reached my talent wall, I know what I'm capable of.
Yeah, but it's also like,
here, give me that, I'll take it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I think you're like, the reason why so many people like you on this level is because like your whole thing is still in this day and age, especially like unique and like people aren't doing it.
What do you mean?
Like people your age.
Oh.
And like kind of representing the like values of that time period that you grew up in, I think.
I think that it's like, it's easier for me now to do comedy now that I'm 40 than I was when I was 34 when I or 33 when I started, because you get, you know, that 7 years has given me perspective, and it's also like people will tend to listen to somebody that's older than them. Like, I just think it's natural.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the only reason I've ever had, and I've had very minimal success, listeners, like, trust me, but I think that I became better when I got older because I think that I just didn't care. Like, I'm like, okay, like, I know I'm not going to be famous.
Yeah.
So, like...
Well, also, like, the younger you are, the more it's just, like, when you start, especially, it's like, oh, yeah, like, people want to hear what I have to say.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this is going to be.
Nobody fucking cares.
And it's
does.
Like, nobody fucking cares. Like, nobody cares what the older people have
yeah,
to
like,
say.
Yeah, like, they don't even care what I have to say.
So the younger you are, the, like, the less people give a shit about any real opinion you have whatsoever.
Like, here's a perfect example. There was a 27-year-old comedian, nice guy, and he's like, he was trying to tell me that he wanted to write, like, a back-in-the-day joke. And I'm like, you're 27. Like, you're still a kid. Like, people aren't going to, like... Like, I understand what he's trying to do, but I was like, you're 13 years too young, 14, 15, 16 years too young to say that. Because not enough time has passed for your generation to really grasp how much life changes.
Yeah.
So, it's like, if I go to a show that's mostly people my age, there's certain things that I can say because I know they're going to land. Like, I can be like, dude, remember we had fucking landlines in a bag? I had a telephone in my bathroom. Like, and... Like, I think about that, and like, okay, then that's just, it seems ancient now, so it's antiquated and funny. But when you're, like, 25 and 26, and you want to talk about, like, 15 years, like, people just, they're not going
to,
it doesn't
resonate.
The
only way you can really do that is to be, like, it's crazy how long ago that seems, because it was very recent.
It was very recent.
Like, and where you had to, like, humble yourself to it a certain amount, where it's, like, I'm not really being wise here, which is part of the joke as to like how have things changed this much in such a short period of time.
It's I like
and
I
there's like workarounds for almost all those kind of things.
Well, yeah, I think that it can be done,
but it that all comes from that awareness of it's like if you're young, people don't give a shit about what your experience
is. I think the best thing to say is that I don't think that people, especially now with stand-up comedy, like the world, how the world is, I don't think the fucking world cares what we have to say.
Yeah.
Whether it's me, you, or someone on TV. I just don't think that...
You can even get in, you can get in trouble for what you, like, truly...
Yeah.
Like, why get into it? It's, really, like, especially, like, if our job is really to, like, make people laugh.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why I would want to get incredibly serious in doing so. Like, I'm going to find, like, the stupider shit that, like, me... That would make me and my friends laugh.
Yeah.
We'd fucking,
but
like,
you know. Don't you think that there's a certain amount, like, in my opinion, sorry, it's always come across as like, there's someone dying out there. it always comes across as like, I like that people have political opinions, and I like if they can package them in a smart and funny way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not discrediting that. But at the same time, I'm going, there's nobody on the fucking planet that gives a fuck what I, Nick Cupsey, has to say. Like, nobody does. Nobody fucking cares, Kev. And, like, I think that when you look at it like that, it changed my perspective, like, about comedy. I was, like, a year ago, I was like, nobody fucking cares if I talk about getting a finger in my asshole during a blowjob or Donald Trump and Mike Pence. So it's all, to me, like... I don't know. It's not that I
honestly, people would probably care more about the finger in the asshole thing because they haven't heard it all day, every single day for like a year and a half. Like, it's the, like, I kind of respect people that do it. It's like, especially if they do it well, just because it's like, oh, that's like impossible to make funny anymore because it's like, it's too much. It's too in everybody's fucking face all the time.
Yeah.
And so, like, to turn it on its head, like, legitimately is kind of hard because people are, like, so exhausted
with
the topic.
It's, I think that that's, I think it happens with every social movement. Like, you and I discussed this. A year from now, we're not going to remember the kids from Florida that were in the shooting.
Yeah.
Like, that, I think what happens is they get introduced into society, and then it becomes a thing, and then it reaches peak. Then it reaches peak saturation, and then people forget because they need to forget. Like, I think that what we tend to, like, that's why they're like, keep saying another scandal with Trump, another scandal with Trump. And it's like, yeah, because we can't remember the last ones, because if we held on to all that, it's just going to make us angry. Like, you can't walk around with that much fucking anger.
And it makes it a lot harder to write jokes for topical subjects like that, because like a joke, like you have like probably less than 2 months to workshop any news joke before it's like dated, where like you might be able to bring it up again in like a non-news context, in like a, hey, remember when that happened, like 2 years after it happened.
Yeah
Like I was thinking about the other day, the remember that kid that got in trouble for building a clock and bringing it to school?
Yes, it was under the Obama administration.
And I was like, oh yeah, that was only like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But like, I had like completely forgotten about like how big of a deal that was and how people were saying like yada 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 about it. And I'm like, oh yeah, like I don't know how long, like how I would, like how many people would remember it if I even brought that up.
No, because like it took me a second, like, and where, I was like, oh yeah, I remember the clock.
Where, even because of that, because it was only like, because it was like 3 years ago, that might be more interesting to some people because they don't remember it ever happening.
Yeah.
So it might be newer to them as a 3-year-old story than a 4 or 5 year old month story might be, because they've heard about it for so long consecutively.
I read that about comedy, where they said it used to be, you know, things, because things weren't so immediate, that a comedian could go on stage 6 months after something and talk about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that things were, like, slower to move through the culture. And now with the idea of, like, it beats, like, the immediacy of it. Because by the time a stand-up comedian, like you said, 2 months to workshop a joke, or maybe, if you get lucky, let's just say you get fucking lucky, and you can nail it in a week. Like, I've been lucky every once in a while. But it doesn't matter, because you've already been beat to the punch by about 70 fucking thousand other people on the internet who are making the same joke about the same premise. Yeah. So it's like it's not worth it. Like, that's what I'm talking about, the death of comedy. Like, where you can have an immediate take on something and you don't have to wait, you know, and there's no point of reflection, you know? Whatever. I gotta go.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Nick Cupsey. What kind of stuff do you have going on?
Me and Ben Fidler have a new book coming out soon.
Oh, sick. So you guys already had released the
Five People You Meet in Wawa.
Five People You Meet in Wawa. That's available on Amazon
and Barnes & Noble.
And what's the new one we got coming out?
Well, we can't say the topic.
Can't say. Do we have a drop date? Or
I think we're looking for before summer.
Before summer. Are you checking for specifics or?
No, yeah, I was. I forget where I wrote it down though.
Okay. I'll add it in post where.
Yeah, I'll
where,
let you
where
know.
And when you can.
Also, I'm going to be on WHYY in June on a show called Common Space. It airs, I think, the first or second month or Sunday in June on WHYY in Philadelphia.
Cool. Common Space, WHYY.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. And thank you for having me. Thanks for the check-in.
Yeah, dude. And thanks for coming out. And for me, the only thing I have coming up is this Tuesday at The Fire on Girard Avenue in Philly. We have the open heckle mic.
Oh, God bless you.
Run by Brian Yanez. I'm one of the designated hecklers.
That's great.
So show up, and I'll tell you you're bad at comedy. Thank you very much. Have a good